Hey, if you're listening to this, I will assume you're at least interested in money, understanding the economy, and finances as well. And some of us now want to get the next generation interested as well. So check out Million Bazillion, Marketplace's award-winning kids podcast that breaks down money to help dollars make more sense. Tune into Million Bazillion wherever you find your favorite podcasts. A whole new season is out now. Million Bazillion is presented in partnership with Greenlight, the debit card and money app for kids and teens. Greenlight helps kids and teens learn to earn, save, spend wisely, and invest. Get 1 month free and an extra $10 when you sign up for a Greenlight account at greenlight.com/million. There are 164 million people in the American workforce, but what kinds of jobs do they do? And really, who are those people anyway? A new series starts today telling their stories from American public media. This is Marketplace. In Los Angeles, I'm Kai Rizdahl. Tuesday, today, the 18th day of February. Good as always to have you along, everybody. Our series on the stories of the American workforce in the second half of the program today. But we begin with a phrase not often heard in this economy the past couple of decades, brought to us jointly by COVID-19 and the best-known device company in the world. Apple has let it be known it's not going to make its earnings numbers this quarter because its mostly China-based supply chain has been slower to bounce back than the company had been guessing. Nintendo is worried as well. Nissan and Hyundai have closed down entire car plants because they can't get the parts they need from China. And the longer this goes, the more these shortages become a big deal, which gets us, and Marketplace's Scott Tong, to the phrase that is on a whole lot of people's lips, supply shock.
Every day, 4 million smartphones get sold somewhere in the world. 500,000 TVs change hands. So what happens if the supply cuts off for a long enough time? Economist Carmen Reinhart teaches at Harvard's Kennedy School of Government.
The way supply shocks work is they have a negative effect on quantity and a positive effect on price. The most notorious of the supply shocks, of course, was the oil shock of the 70s.
The oil embargo against the U.S. quadrupled gas prices and fueled hyperinflation. Now, hardly anyone expects that kind of impact, at least for now, but Cornell economist Ishwar Prasad thinks price tags could go up for certain products, namely electronics.
Cell phones and other wireless devices, as well as TVs, computers, those sorts of things are almost certainly going to be affected.
If the epidemic lasts into the spring, there could be a longer-term supply shock. Multinational firms could revamp their supply chains away from China, which could raise costs and prices for all kinds of things. Agathe Demaret, a forecaster at the Economist Intelligence Unit, is watching closely.
We don't see any signs at the moment that Western companies are going to go out of China. That being said, if the outbreak is not contained by end March, it will be much more difficult to address for global companies.
Demaret is monitoring ships leaving Chinese ports. Right now, she says, some are just 10% full. I'm Scott Tong for Marketplace.
Same basic story for our off-lead today, the disruptions wrought by the coronavirus. Different industry, though. Chinese buy more American real estate than any other foreign buyers, more than $13 billion worth last year. COVID-19 is going to change that, but as Marketplace's Amy Scott reports, demand from those Chinese buyers was falling even before the virus hit.
After the U.S. housing crash, Chinese buyers started pouring in, taking advantage of bargain prices. Leslie Appleton Young is chief economist of the California Association of Realtors. She says by 2016, Chinese nationals made up more than half of foreign buyers in that state.
And in 2019, that had dropped to 33%.
What happened? Well, the slowing of the Chinese economy, new restrictions on foreign investment, the trade war, plus higher prices and falling inventory.
All of those mixed together have created a much smaller footprint than we saw, let's say, in the decade before this.
Now, coronavirus. John Wong represents a lot of Chinese buyers as a real estate broker in San Francisco.
And in conversations with clients and friends from China, the fact that everyone was staying home and not going to work is clearly going to impact the economy of China.
And that means less cash to invest in U.S. real estate. Lawrence Yoon with the National Association of Realtors says travel restrictions could also dampen demand from Chinese buyers who typically spend $500,000 or more.
Given that sizable expenditure, it is hard to visualize how they would purchase without actually seeing it in person.
So far, though, the uncertainty has boosted the U.S. housing market in one way. Skittish investors have been buying more treasury bonds. That's pushed interest rates down, including for mortgages. I'm Amy Scott for Marketplace.
All in all, traders and the algorithms that love them were less pessimistic today than you might have thought. We'll have the details when we do the numbers. Among the earnings reports coming tomorrow will be one from the company that trades under the ticker symbol SAM, SAM for its flagship product, Sam Adams Lager. Boston Beer Company is expected to announce pretty good numbers for their fourth quarter, but it ain't beer that's doing it. Hard seltzer is the new thing. And Boston Beer's Truly brand, lightly flavored fizzy malt liquor drinks, is just part of an oh-so-fast-growing market. Marketplace's Megan McCarty-Carino has more on that one.
If ever there were a sign of changing times, it was during the Super Bowl. You know, the Super Bowl of beer commercials. Except...
Bud Light made a seltzer?
This year, Budweiser used some of its precious advertising time on something new.
Bud Light Seltzer. Unquestionably good.
The beer behemoth is the latest to jump into a $2 billion hard seltzer market, led by White Claw and Truly, with new brands popping up seemingly every week.
Been a total phenomenon. I mean, it exploded.
Ben Steinman is the editor of Beer Marketers Insights. He says the hard seltzer market grew faster in just the last year than imported or craft beer ever has in any single year. And he says it shows no signs of slowing. The clear fizzy drinks with around 5% alcohol seem to be pulling market share mostly from light beer, says Jim Watson, a beverage industry analyst with Rabobank.
You know, the hard seltzers are really designed to be not very offensive. So it's light on flavor. It's light on calories and carbs.
He says unlike beer, hard seltzer manages to pull in men and women equally. And the diversity of flavors from mango to pear and elderflower appeal to young consumers, says consultant David Garfield with Alex Partners.
Millennials are flavor seekers. While they can be brand loyal, they like to try new products, new flavors.
He says the ability to switch flavors as trends change could give hard seltzers more staying power than previous malt beverages like Zima, which fizzled out into a punchline. I'm Megan McCarty-Carino for Marketplace.
A whodunit now. In which European copyright law, the Rolling Stones, and YouTube feature prominently. This past New Year's Eve, audio of 70 rare Rolling Stones songs just appeared. Some of those songs, by the way, had never been heard by the public. And then the next day, they were gone, taken down, like they were never there. Oh, except they had been. Marketplace's Jasmine Garst unravels the mystery.
Jim Benz was 11 years old when he first heard the Rolling Stones back in the 1960s. He became a diehard fan, but he never got to see their legendary Madison Square Garden shows in 1969. Then, last New Year's Eve, a friend texted him, "Check out this YouTube site." And there they were, a treasure trove filled with dozens of tracks, including the concerts at the Garden.
For the first time in 3 years, the Rolling Stones! The Rolling Stones!
Songs from some of those shows have been released on a live album, but the YouTube tapes were soundboard recordings, unedited.
It was really a delight to hear the complete concerts. This was live and raw and exactly what people heard that night.
Well, not quite. The YouTube tapes were taken down before we could listen, but a fan shared with us what had been there. The recording sounded like someone had intentionally played a dial tone over the music. But why? Well, the YouTube channel in question links back to ABCO, the record label that controls the rights to some early Stone songs, like Satisfaction and Paint It Black. APCO has had a notoriously bad relationship with the Stones over this. Every time one of those songs is used in, say, a commercial or movies, APCO gets a check. Young musicians often sign away their rights in return for a record deal, but not forever. Lucy Jewell teaches copyright law at the University of Tennessee.
In Europe, if you do not release a sound recording or a live recording within 50 years of its making, then you lose all your copyright rights.
The YouTube recordings are from 1969, which means they turned 50 last year, which is likely why APCO put them on YouTube. The label declined to comment. Record companies have used limited releases to extend European copyrights before. Sony published just 100 copies of a Bob Dylan album, aptly titled The Copyright Extension Collection. But a scratchy YouTube page that disappears after a day? Jewel says that could be a stretch of the European law. U.S. law is friendlier to artists, says Jennifer Jenkins, a professor at Duke University Law School.
So after 35 years, eligible authors, they can actually serve notice and get their rights back. At the end of the day, they give the artist a second bite at the apple.
Prince was famous for his legal fights to get back the rights to his early work. He finally reached a settlement in 2014 with Warner Brothers. That was partly because the label knew some of his big hits were about to turn 35. I never meant to call you when you fans were able to remove that annoying dial tone from the Stones recordings. APCO hasn't said if it will ever sell these recordings. Maybe they're too niche. Fans say they wish they could buy them anyway. But you know, you can't always get what you want. I'm Jasmine Garst for Marketplace.
Coming up.
I like cars. Fast and the Furious came out when I was like 13. So all those things were where I was seeing myself going.
Where he saw himself going, sure. Not, though, where he ended up. But first, let's do the numbers. The Dow Industrial is off 165 today, about a half percent, 29,232. The NASDAQ was basically flat, 97.32 there. The S&P 500 down 9 points, 0.2%, 33.70 is the number. Megan was talking about the thriving hard seltzer market. Boston Beer Company up more than 4% today. AB InBev, the maker of Corona and Budweiser and Beck's, to name a couple, gained 0.6%. Heineken up 0.2% today. S&P, Standard & Poor's lowered Macy's credit to junk today. Not great. Macy's stock finished today 3.5% lower. Other department stores today were kind of mixed. JCPenney dialed up 0.2%. Kohl's shed 1.4%. Apple stock suffered today, as you might imagine, down 1.8%. You're listening to Marketplace.
Hey there, I'm Bridget, co-host of Million Bazillion, Marketplace's podcast for kids about money. I want to tell you about our email newsletter course, Million Bazillion Academy. In this new and improved course, we'll help your kids learn about crypto, credit cards, and inflation in just 6 weeks. Each lesson comes with a podcast episode, a fun cartoon, discussion questions, and an activity that lets kids apply what they're learning in the real world. You can start at any time and work at your own pace. Sign up today at marketplace.org/academy.
This is Marketplace. I'm Kai Rizdahl. You know, we spend a whole lot of time on this program talking about American workers. We talk about them on the first Friday of every month when the jobs report comes out.
Today, 266,000 new jobs.
I talked about in the jobs report being not too doggone bad.
More people coming into the labor force as well.
We talk about them when we talk about wages and why they're not going up more.
Wages are just keeping pace.
Wages? Not so great.
The American workers' purchasing power has basically stayed steady.
And we talk about them when we talk to the people doing the jobs where they have to scramble the most when there are big changes in the national and global economies.
Prices are just tumbling every day.
This is steel that we ordered 6, 7, 8 months prior.
You know, if there's one thing that retailers do is we adapt.
And we talk about them because the American labor force is the engine of this economy. But really, how much do we know about the people who make this economy work and whether or not this economy is working for them? That's the through line of a series we're launching today called The United States of Work, digging deep into the labor force and telling the stories of people in it. Some definitions first, though, I think. We are talking here about everybody over the age of 16 who has a job, wants a job, and is looking for a job. That's 164 or so million people. We are not talking about people who don't have a job and aren't looking, people who don't work outside the home, active duty military, and people who are incarcerated. But 164 million is way too many people to call up and talk to. So here's what we did. We took big picture data about those 164 million people, what kinds of jobs they do, how the government classifies them, and what the demographic breakdown is. And then we came up with 10 profiles, 10 archetypes, to roughly match the labor force as a whole. And then we went out and we found those people in real life. Hey, it's Kai Rizdahl in Los Angeles. How are you?
Hey, Kai. Stephanie Silverman in Nashville. I'm good.
Great. How are you doing?
I'm all right. How are you?
Hi, Kai.
We've got a doctor in rural Ohio.
I'm the owner. I'm the employer. I'm the physician. And I'm also the plumber sometimes.
A hairstylist in Boise, Idaho.
Boise's small, so it'd be interesting to be like at a restaurant and you look over and you're like, oh man, I gave that person a bad haircut a long time ago.
A truck driver from Kansas City, Missouri.
I notice people swerving. I notice people texting. I notice people looking back in the back seat at their children.
Them and seven more. And over the next week or so and for the rest of the year, we're going to be following all 10. At work, at home, at school, for some, all of them though, making a go of it in this economy. This is the United States of Work.
There's always things that you don't like about your job.
You work hard for what you want.
You know, every job has their ups and downs.
Whatever good job means.
I like the hustle. I like working fast.
It's not a career. It's a lifestyle.
The first stop on our 10-person journey through the United States of Work is New York City.
Man, it's New York real estate. It's all like closed and cramped.
I'm in a pretty standard Manhattan office building right near 34th and 8th to meet Michael Durant.
Hey, I'm Kai. I'm Michael. Nice to see you, Michael. How are you? Thanks for taking the time. Sorry my hand is wet. It's raining outside.
Man, Michael's 31 years old, native New Yorker, certified public accountant by trade. He has worked here, the firm of Prager Metis, for a couple of years, give or take.
We're a mid-size accounting firm, national practice, and we also have expanded internationally, so we're growing.
We're growing. Yeah, well, you can see by the construction next door.
Yeah.
We sat down on a couch around the corner from his cubicle, near a kitchen that people were wandering in and out of, we should say here, to talk about his place in these United States of Work.
Tell me about being a CPA. What do you do every day? When it's not tax season. I mean, imagine tax season, right? We know what you're doing.
Yeah,
but now,
so
what are you
tax
doing?
Season is compliance, but throughout the year, we work with, particularly my department's high net worth individuals, so trust and estate's all about that planning for the future. What legacy do you want to leave?
Yeah.
How do you want to leave it? Protecting assets is really something we do.
Michael spends most of his days at a desk or in meetings looking over numbers and talking to clients. In our 10-person reimagining of the American labor force, he's one of four people in the broad category of jobs that the Bureau of Labor Statistics calls management, professional, and related occupations. In real life, that's nearly 40% of all the workers in this economy, the biggest category there is, and it includes teachers and CEOs, dentists, registered nurses, and architects as well.
So big picture, How's your economy right now? I mean, your economic day-to-day is good, fine, you need more, what?
For me, I would say it's on an upward trend. You know, it's not, you know, who doesn't want a better economy for themselves?
Yeah.
But I wouldn't say I feel any pressure or too much pressure from the economy. Like, I'm in a career field where it's a shortage right now. CPAs are needed.
Wow.
And firms are always looking to hire. So the economy for me is really well because my skill set is needed.
He makes about $85,000 a year, Michael does. He's got a 401k, a couple of months savings in the bank. He bought an apartment up by Yankee Stadium when he was 21.
So tell me, you're a Yankees fan, right?
Of course.
Okay, all right.
When they're not at home.
Yes, that's which makes a lot of sense.
And if he lost his job tomorrow?
I can easily say, I'll be fine, no problem.
That's not to say that every person in this slice of the labor force is doing fine, because they're not. But people like Michael, with college degrees, marketable skills, and professional certifications, do tend to out-earn other kinds of workers. Michael, though, didn't always know that this slice of the labor force would include him.
How did you wind up here? I mean, when you were 15, were you like, I'm going to be an accountant?
No. I was going to be a mechanic.
You were going to be a mechanic?
Yes. So my grandfather owned a trucking garage. He fixed trucks and cars. This is something I've been around all my life. I like cars. Fast and the Furious came out when I was like 13. So all those things were where I was seeing it, so myself going.
Till high school, working at McDonald's at the time.
So I think I was making $6.75 an hour. And when the high school senior came in, who had just finished her internship,
right,
and she explained the process. You got to take all these extra classes and you got to get such and such grades. And at high school, I'm thinking, I just want to go outside and have fun. So yeah. I wasn't interested until she said, and then if you do well, you get this internship, you could make $10 an hour. And I was like, ooh.
He does it and winds up getting an internship with the accounting firm KPMG.
I believe it was $10 or $10.50 an hour. So it was definitely a big bump and it was exposure.
If you hadn't gotten that internship way back and then been exposed to KPMG and all of that, where would you be right now? What would you be doing?
I'd probably be a mechanic at like Pep Boys or something, just because I had no exposure to anything else other than manual blue-collar labor. The only person in my life who had a college degree at the time was my grandmother, which she didn't use. She preferred working with her hands.
So fundamentally, you're first generation, right? I mean,
pretty much.
Real, for real?
Yes.
But that internship, that exposure, didn't just change Michael's expectations about his future. It changed his family's economic expectations, too.
Hey!
How are you? What's going on?
It's good to see you.
I went up to Michael's apartment up by Yankee Stadium to visit him and his little brother, AJ.
I zone him out after a while.
That's what teenagers do.
That is what teenagers do.
AJ's in high school. He and Michael are 16 years apart. And his plans for the future are markedly different than his brother's were at his age.
I guess I have a different history than Michael because I have a bunch of people like telling me go to college. They're here to support me.
Yeah, AJ just went on a college tour, an HBCU college tour. So
that's
he
great.
Got to, how many schools? 8 schools?
No, 13.
No. That's cool. Good for you. That's awesome. Tell me about this camp that Michael sent you to at Columbia.
Oh, so a few years ago, I was sent to this tech camp at Columbia because at that time I was really into programming and I wanted to grow up being the next Bill Gates.
Okay. All right. That's a pretty big goal. Michael's sitting there going, all right.
Yeah.
That's a goal. That's a goal. So think about that. In 15 years, this family went from one brother thinking he would grow up to be an auto mechanic to another brother knowing he's going to college and thinking he might grow up to be Bill Gates. But it's not just AJ who's got more school in his future.
So class is at 6:15, so we got about a half an hour.
4 nights a week after a full day of work, Michael heads across the East River to the City University of New York School of Law.
I just always wanted to go to law school. Professionally, it expands my portfolio of services or abilities that I will have to provide. But also looking at myself and the difference between my friends and even family members, and the difference is I got a different education that allowed me to take advantage of more opportunities.
Michael and AJ too probably will be able to live and save and pay off their student loans because education gave them the ticket to this slice of the American labor force.
So this is the school here. I actually, for me, just the school in general represents future opportunity. And I think that's what most of us come here for, is the future ability to affect change.
So that was Michael Durant, the first in our 10-person construct of the labor force. 10 people we're using to represent the 164 million people who make this economy work. Later in the week, the other 9, some who didn't go to college but found opportunities in other ways, some who tried it but decided it wasn't for them, and some who went to college but aren't using their degrees. On the program tomorrow, though, we're heading west.
You know, I tell people all the time we have over 900 bars in Portland, which is a lot, but we have about 12 bartenders for every bar, and you don't need that many.
If you want to know more about how we use that data from the BLS and came up with the list of people you're going to be hearing from, we've got a whole piece about it at our website, marketplace.org/work.
final note on the way out, President Trump issued a whole slew of pardons today, as you might have heard, including one to a person probably familiar to listeners of this program. Michael Milken came to be known in the mid to late 1980s as the junk bond king. Junk bonds, of course, really risky, but really handy ways for companies to raise a whole lot of money. Long story short, Milken ran afoul of securities law, was prosecuted, and confessed. At his sentencing hearing, U.S. District Judge Kimball Wood reminded Milken of, and this is a quote, a legitimate public concern that everyone, no matter how rich or powerful, obey the law, and that our financial markets, in which so many people who are not rich invest their savings, be free of secret manipulation. That's the end of the quote. Milken served 22 months of what wound up being a two-year sentence. Since his release, Milken's given hundreds of millions of dollars to charities and medical research, and he has founded, out here in Santa Monica, the Milken Institute Economic Think Tank. All right, we got to go. Dow Industrials off 165 points today, 0.5%. The NASDAQ basically flat. The S&P 500 down 9. That is 0.2%. Our digital and on-demand team includes Kerry Barber, Samantha Fields, Ben Hethcote, Sarah Menendez, and Erica Phillips. Sitar Nieves is our executive director of on-demand. I'm Kai Rizdahl. We will see you tomorrow, everybody. This is APM.
The world can be a confusing place for kids, and finding the words to explain it all can be tricky, too. Introducing Million Bazillion, a Webby-winning podcast from Marketplace that takes your kids on exciting adventures to answer the awkward and complex questions they have about money. Each week, we tackle hard-hitting inquiries from kid listeners like,
what is a college account and how does it work?
I want to know what unions are and what they are for.
Why does the U.S. have so much gold in Fort Knox and what do they use it for?
Help your kids understand how money fits into the world around us. Listen to Million Bazillion wherever you get your podcasts.